can't wait to cut all this out.
Sorry, you're the only correct view.
Well,
Sachin is a safe view.
It's not about
I'm saying it's not
about me being right. It's about me protecting you from the backlash.
If Sachin is a safe view, I have no issues with this whatsoever. Sachin is the filter upon which our views are put out to the world, and I'm fine with that.
I just can't resist myself, and even though I know you're right, I just can't resist myself.
This podcast examines mental health through the lens of video games and gaming culture. But remember, real life is not a game. If you do have any mental health concerns, always seek professional guidance. The content of this podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not constitute professional advice. The opinions in this podcast are our own and don't represent those of any professional group or organization. We gladly welcome any feedback. And with that said, thanks for listening.
Hello everybody, and welcome to another edition of our Gaming the Mind podcast. I'm Donald. This is Sachin.
Hi. I was really thinking of something funny to do.
He's in high spirits. Here's Marcus.
Hello everyone.
And Fi.
Hello everybody. Hello film children.
So...
Sorry.
What did you say? Hello?
It doesn't come off the way that you think it does.
Hello, fellow children.
I know, I get what he's doing. He's doing the married with children. Not married with children. Two and a Half Men thing, but like...
No, wrong one.
Yeah. The guy with the skateboard, yeah?
Oh, is it? It's from Two and a Half Men. Yeah. Is that where the meme came from?
Meme.
I think it's meme, actually, but...
It's meme.
Yes, it is memes. We're being deliberately silly.
Meme. It's also genie.
Anyway, has anyone been playing anything of note? Hi, what have you been... What have you been up to?
Actually reinstalled Bioshock Infinite and Battlefield 3 because I'm trying to find a game which is single player which I can complete within a couple of hours.
Are the single player campaigns that short?
To be fair, Battlefield I completed about 3 missions, I got bored of it, and Bioshock Infinite I got a fair way through but stopped as well.
People said about Bioshock Infinite that it's one of those things where the problem is the paradigm is that all AAA games at that time had to be first-person shooters. And people said that they actually quite wanted to see what's happening next with the characters. They didn't really enjoy so much the actual computer game bit of mowing down people in a fairly sort of standard way. I don't know if anyone else had this thought, if there are games out there which would have benefited from the guns being taken away. Like, for example, in Watch Dogs 2, people have said that it might have been a much more interesting game if you literally didn't have the option to kill people.
Oh, yeah, Red Dead. Is it
Redemption?
Sorry, Red Dead Redemption 2.
I think guns is pretty central to that, as it's a Western, isn't it?
But not to the person you're playing as. And
you're an outlaw.
But it's basically, as much as you try to stealth anything or try to be the good guy... try to be sort of the noble thief, let's say, it will always end up with a shootout where you have to kill everyone to progress.
Yeah, and I think people have... there's been a lot of praise heaped on Red Dead Redemption 2, but some have said that actually in terms of gameplay mechanics, it hasn't progressed since GTA 5 or GTA 4, in that you have this very big open world where you can do everything until you're progressing the story, and then you're kept on a very short leash in terms of what you're doing. And that can include you having to play in a way that you don't want to play.
And what's that way to describe it every single time?
No!
Well, Fi, that is, I believe the term for that is Ludo...
Fi really hates me today.
I'm going to say it. Ludonarrative dissonance, which Sachin doesn't like us talking
and
about.
And on the bingo card for today, you can tick one.
So we can tick that off the bingo card. But it is true.
So, but speaking of playing in ways that you don't want to play, or playing characters that you don't want to play, so Assassin's Creed Odyssey coming under fire.
Is it good?
The game is good.
It'll be very polished, I'm sure.
But you get to play as a man or woman, and... you can have romances with anyone. So you're basically dictating what your sexuality is within this game.
But then they retconned it.
By the time of recording, they've gone back on this. But
they've
retconned
the retcon.
The original announcement was that if you... I think it's regardless, but certainly for the woman character, she ends up having a baby with a man. And it's not even a man that anyone really wanted her to get with. But especially if you were playing her as a strict, only sexually attracted to women character, then the game just said, well, we don't care how you were playing this. The DLC actually says that canonically she got with a guy and she had a baby. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of disrespecting at least the freedom that the players thought they had.
And I think Ubisoft and the Assassin's Creed series, I think they've come under a lot of fire. One, because they're one of the heavy hitters, so a lot of people have played their games and they'll have a lot more attention and scrutiny a lot of games. But I think one of the previous things was about them claiming that they couldn't have female characters because of the extra work that would have to be put into assets, and that was patently untrue compared to, you know, what's happened since then.
I mean, I believe the assets thing in terms of every single line had to be recorded by two different actors, right? I don't think that that's something that a smaller game company could have pulled off.
No.
And it's sort of testament to how much money Ubisoft can throw around that they've managed to do that. And so if they said before, look, we can't give you that option because we'd have to literally re-record every line, I get that. Like, it kind of makes sense to me. Anthem lets you choose woman or man voice for your character.
Did you hear about the thing about Anthem?
I've heard lots of things about Anthem.
Supposedly.
Which of many
which,
things?
Which thing are you referring
which
to?
Which of it? The one where a YouTuber who put a review for it said that he was asked to remove it.
Oh, that's a messy situation, yeah. Because it's like, it's a he said, they said sort of thing.
Yeah,
because
so
I think like
he was sponsored to do it. He wrote a bad review. He says that they asked him to remove it because he wrote a very bad review.
Well, they say he didn't put the right watermark on it.
They say he didn't put the right watermark.
But if he's been allowed to put it back up with the right watermark, then I assume that...
Oh, no, he just removed the watermark and just put it off.
Well, anyway, I don't think that I don't think that he's alone in his opinion, and I don't think that EA is going to stop the tide of opinion that it's a mediocre game at best.
Is it a PvE or PvP?
PvE.
Oh, I actually wouldn't mind a good PvE game, to be fair.
It's a looter shooter like Destiny.
Oh,
Destiny 2
and all that. Destiny never really held my attention.
Well, then, the problem is that Anthem is everything that no one liked about Destiny, and that everything that Destiny improved upon, Anthem kind of ignored and has gone back to the early days of Destiny. And speaking of short single player campaigns, or short as in the short narrative campaign, apparently you take out all the grinding and everything, there's only 8 hours of content in there.
Oh god.
And it's one of these things where the credits roll and you're like, what?
Wait, for Destiny or for Anthem?
For Anthem. So, but it's one of these things where, like, obviously the within today's culture of how games come out, you've really got to wait for Anthem 0.5.
Like, it's one of those things that depresses me a bit, it upsets me a bit about, since everyone now has a good internet collection. Because I remember a time where you would pre-order a game and you'd get it on day one and it would work perfectly. There was no plan B, there was no second option. Mm-hmm. You either got your game in shape or that's how it's going to be. Unless people can return and copies and get second editions, but that's a big deal. So I missed that time. Also because of the lack of good internet, or if you go back even further in time, no internet at all, it meant that there wasn't really the same nickel and diming sort of DLC.
You
would get, it's amazing for a lot of AAA games before this time, the amount of freebies that you would get just for fun. Like I remember with GoldenEye, all the extra characters in the multiplayer mode, all these random little cheat codes and fun little extras, big head modes and all these sorts of things that nowadays people have discovered that they can charge for, and a certain proportion, a big enough proportion will be willing to pay for them, that it's a profitable way to do things.
You know what I really miss is those what are they called, action replay cards or game genies?
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, you just pop that in, insert a code, and you get, like,
do all sorts of fun things.
All sorts of fun things that even the developer probably didn't intend for you to.
And nowadays, you probably sign a EULA basically saying, if I do such a thing, I lose my license to the game. It's a very different time we live in.
Cheat codes really don't exist anymore. I've not thought about cheat codes for years. I don't think there are any, are there?
I saw by NBA 2K something, since 2K14 or 2K13, I remember that you play a character. In the old days, if you want to cheat to go make a character better, you just go and download the... What's the one which allows you to go and adjust the hexadecimals within it?
We know what you mean.
Yeah, something like that. But then nowadays you can't, because if you want your character to become better, then what you must do is you must either grind or pay for microtransactions to be better.
And of course they're not going to allow you to do it for free, because part of their business model is that they know that the speed at which you're making progress is going to be too slow for a lot of people, and so they're going to get a little bit bored or irritated and spend money. I think it's a sad trend, and I think there's been a bit of a backlash, and I hope there will be a bit of a reverse, that the pendulum will swing the other way.
Speaking of a quick independent game which I played, which me and Sachin were actually talking about outside of this podcast previously, I played that Chinese Parent game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it wasn't so much. It wasn't so much talking about it. It's like every time I see an article on it, I'm like, I send it to Fi and he never responds. I'm like, am I being racist? So, like telling him to play this thing?
So my cousin had it in his computer, and I played it on a Steam account, and it is satire. It's really not this thing about, oh, they're showing you how to raise a child to become successful. Rubbish. It's an absolute
satire.
I mean.
Satire in what way?
Okay, so for example, and this may be Marcus and myself are both from Chinese descent.
Yes.
I agree? Yeah.
Yes.
So there's things which you sort of go, oh, this rings a lot more true. Like there's one of them which was during Chinese New Year. It's a mini game where you reject being given a red packet, which is basically when a senior person gives you money for the new year.
Is there a set number of times you need to reject it before accepting it?
Exactly. So it's a thing where you have to reject it
enough. But not too much.
But not too much. And then at some point you have to accept it. And then if you reject it too much, then you lose all the money. If you accept it too fast, you shame your parents. And I just thought it was a genius little mini game. I was like, this is hilarious. This is making me laugh so much.
That's not a satire though. That's absolutely real then, isn't it?
No,
that's
because
the thing that happens.
You don't.
But it's not done in that way. Of I'm imagining a hand. I'm imagining a hand
is
a sign.
Literally, it's like a hand going, take it. Go, no. It's too much. No, no. Please take. No. Oh yeah. And then if you made a mistake, if the person goes, what a well behaved child. I guess I'll keep it then. Like, oh no. I did it too much.
And I think that happens in. There's similar things in all cultures, isn't there? I think in Western culture, in paying for meals at restaurants, we've had a dance with everyone else, a kind of a metaphorical dance of, you know, I'm going to pay, da-da-da-da-da.
Until somebody... But, okay, so another example of sort of... Like I said, maybe satire is not the right thing.
And I just say that game is called Chinese Parents. And
Chinese Parents.
And you can find it on Steam. And it's about raising children as a... Do you play the child or the parent?
You play as the child.
So being raised...
You play as the parent. Then you tell the child, like, you select the stuff for the child to go and do. So, like, there was one of them which was, milestones. Child says... Dad is his first word. Then increase parents' pride or something like that. It's like the father's going, oh, I'm so touched he called me first. And then I was asking my cousin, is it always the father's first? And he said, I can be the mother as well. It just depends on your luck. This sounds genius. I just thought, oh, this is hilarious. Or like things which you can, like the early stages of the game, because you're a baby, you can't do much. It's basically eat, sleep, and poop. And so what are you going to do? You actually have a diary. You have to go eat, sleep, poop.
And you let them listen to Mozart, and that will increase their intelligence.
Oh, I'm not too sure. I only played it one run, but I just thought it was hilarious.
Okay, but I think as long as it was made by Chinese people, then we're all good.
Really? I mean,
is that important?
Because you can sort of say, like, this is a satire of my own culture, and I understand maybe that it's not 100% like this. Like, we can all laugh at ourselves.
But that doesn't take away from Sasha's experience, even if it was made by a non-Chinese person.
I think we've got some argument here, Sachin, about appropriation.
No, I'm not. It's more than appropriation. If it's a satire, then you're really having someone from outside your culture make a sort of caricature of what your culture is.
I will put a little disclaimer. I've only played about roughly about 30 minutes or an hour of it, so it could become really dark, really bad somewhere down the line. I won't know, but you know,
I think it's fair. Like, anyway, if the game is in Chinese, so I'm very much assuming it is made by a Chinese company.
Chinese parents, I thought it was more of maybe satire's not right, it's more of something laughing at ourselves and how our culture raises
that's
us.
That's all right,
and that's sort of what I feel. I mean, a lot of it rang true. Yeah,
that's sweet. I think. Has it made you a better?
God, I mean, I literally paid 10 minutes. So from what I understand from my learning is that children poop.
Your parent yourself.
You're a parent, so do you agree with that?
Has it made you reflect on your own experience?
Do babies really poop?
Do babies really poop? Oh God, yes. Oh God, yes.
And they poop. Has he pooped on your
And the amazing thing about baby poop, which may or may not be in it, is that you have this really thin line where it's, why is it happening so often? Or why hasn't it happened yet? And it's a very thin line. It's like, is something wrong? Why has it happened? Then, oh God, why is there so much?
This is a modern society thing. Like, I think 100 years ago, no one monitored poop. And now we're just like, we've got to monitor everything.
Everything.
Yeah. There's an app for that, I bet.
Because I think, humans are pretty well designed. We can, you know, manage a wide variety of, you know, poop scenarios of diets and people. I think people can get really worried. So I can say there are people from a wide variety of cultures. You know, could eat a wide variety of diets and you know, like still survive. Like you know, surviving whale blubber or whatever, people still survive.
Sorry, so Marcus, what are you playing?
You mean anything since the past?
Yeah, since the
2 hours of when we last.
Marcus, since the last one, which happened 2 weeks ago.
I've been playing Apex Legends for 2 weeks now. I've gotten really good at it.
I'm amazing. No, I'll be honest, Apex Legends is dead to me.
I've heard good things.
I'm old, I'm slow, I'm just not really good at Twitch.
This is the problem, because I've heard, you know, it's difficult to get into Fortnite because you start playing Fortnite and all the kids kill you.
Yeah.
And same with PUBG. But people thought, okay, Apex Legends is out. I'm going to play this now and I won't be behind the curve. And there were people apparently playing, they get dropped and someone tells them, you idiot, why did you get dropped here in the map? This is the worst place to get dropped. And the game's been out for 4 hours.
How do you know?
Yeah.
I was playing with somebody and, okay, so this... I think I started quite soon after it came out. And there was somebody with 900 and something kills already. I was like, wait, how? How is this possible? I have one kill.
Yeah, it's just funny. It's two days into the game and people are releasing how to play characters and stuff like that. Big guides and stuff. It's like, how do you know? What have you done?
Fi was messaging me to say, you know, let's play Apex Legends. And then by the time I installed it, it's like, yeah, I'm bored with it now. thanks, Fi.
It's not bored with it. I think
you got me into Overwatch.
About social networks. I think if there were 3 friends playing it together, I think it would be a great fun game. Because it doesn't matter whether you win or you lose, the enjoyment is just socially being together playing a game.
Sure.
I don't know if I hope it does well or not, because I hope it does well because it sort of challenges the sort of dominance of one particular game. Made by EA, so do I really need to I hope one billionaire beats the other billionaire?
Did you hear that one of the devs for Apex Legends quite pointedly said that EA did not have any control over the actual game? They didn't influence the game that was made.
Basically, I think he'll say that EA gave us money, but we did everything else ourselves.
EA are probably one of the easiest to move on fan pressure that I've seen recently. Star Wars Battlefront 2, people complained about loot boxes.
Yeah.
Loot boxes got removed. And from that point on, EA had a new philosophy, but we're not going to put loot boxes in our games, and we're going to tell people about pack odds in FIFA Ultimate Team, which they kind of did. They didn't, but you know, sort of like some of the pack odds are like less than 1%. You don't know how much less, but they sort of moved to fan pressure. And the latest one has been.
I think they get a lot of stick proportionate to other companies that possibly get ignored a bit despite doing similar anti-consumerist
things. Activision.
Blizzard. Activision.
Yeah, Activision. Well. We're going to bury us all in all these companies.
Activision
Blizzard.
Black Ops 4 recently got a lot of stick for imposing loot boxes in a very unfair way, and have sort of like lessened that aspect. I think EA recognise at least the value of listening to people on these things.
I think they're good at what they do, and part of that is reacting to, you know, if there's an outcry.
Yeah, it's just a really bad financial structure that these things get made in, which is that it's no longer enough to sell games. It's how much money can you pull out these games, because you're satisfying investors who only want you to make more money than you did last year.
You've got to grow your business. You can't do that forever. There's only so many people who can buy games.
But you keep on doing it until your company burns out and the investors don't care. They just want their stock to go up. And so it's all about how much more profit can we pull out of you. It's not enough to make profit. You have to make all the profit. You have to get all the money. Games made by people who are driven by investors primarily, you got to wonder how much room is there for art and how much room is there for satisfying someone's need for relentless.
And you can definitely have both. You can have things which are clearly, you know, commercial products, as all these things are, but also can have something of cultural value. You know, I mean, Hollywood has been doing that for a very long time. They're there to make money, but there have been lots of clearly very, very culturally important pieces of art been made.
Yes. But you know what, like, you can always see the difference between a piece of art which is made free of corporate interest and one which is made within the sphere of corporate interest.
I think the funnest thing are games which have been made predominantly by one person. Like, what's the name?
Undertale?
Well, that's one. What's the one about Paper Stories? Piece? The 2D platformer.
Cave Story.
Cave Story. That's made by one man. So Cave Story, you know. And a lot of the, you know, you can tell when a game is made with a singular vision.
Yeah,
there is a spark.
Well, so I mean, I would hold back on that, because the maker of Iconoclasts made it on his own and took years to do it, and he advised against it. And he said, look, this may seem like a singular artistic vision, but you got to think about everything I was held back from doing because I didn't have anyone doing it with me. And so I can literally think of things, he says, that I would have done differently if people had been working with me.
Yeah.
And so sometimes having a team around you isn't diluting a creative vision, it's enforcing it.
And there's a type of style within film which I think you could also definitely apply to game, the idea of an auteurship sort of film where it is very much a strong vision. And absolutely, it doesn't just have to be one person. There are games that do have a strong sense of one vision, like, for example, Nier Automata, where there is a very clear direction that is noticeably apart from the pack of what is currently in vogue or what most games are chasing.
And this director of Iconoclasts, whose name is
Joachim Sandberg.
Because this is a game that he worked on for 10 years and said, reacting to people's feedback when the game took 10 years and you're sort of self-conscious about how pure the expression actually was, it really did wear down on me, and I've had a lot of psychological issues since. So a few months after it launched, he suffered a panic attack, not knowing what to do, and he called the hospital. This is all from a gamesindustry.biz article where he talked about it. And they told him to come in, and he's doing better now, and he describes it as a slow recovery. And he says, for your own mental health, you need to not squander your friends. You need to not have financial risk right at the start of making a big game. You need to make sure it works before you dedicate your life to it. And the article continues that sacrificing one's mental health for a game is also far from a reliable formula to produce a hit. So I think we romanticize single creator projects, but don't necessarily take into account the stress and struggle involved in those things. And are they the pure artistic vision that we always believe them to be?
Okay. So let's move on to the topic for today. So every now and again in the news, there's, you know, shocking stories of school shootings in the United States, and it is understandable that there are lots of views on what needs to be done. I'm aware that last year there was a video created from the Trump administration, I think, displaying various violent computer games, asking for, you know, us to examine the role video games cause in gun violence.
Did you see this video?
Like, yeah, I did see it.
Because he got like a whole panel around him at the White House of vested parties in school violence. And he just plays this video. It's like a minute-long video of just violence in games. Mm. And it was just the most bizarre thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely bizarre.
It wasn't what you call a very nuanced
no
video or argument on video game violence, was it?
I just want to say this in response, though, because I think like Games for Change made a video in response saying, look how nice games are. Like, look at these beautiful vistas and calm, you know, calm scenes in games. Like, games can be really moving and
things. It's like you criticized film by just picking the highlights of Quentin Tarantino and going, this is what film is.
Yeah, but I also don't think that we need to champion games saying, oh, they're not always violent, because we need to champion the fact that violent games are not horrible, demonic things.
No.
And so own the fact that the majority of action in games is violent action.
Yeah, but I think the more important issue is that this is something that was brought up as there is yet another horrible school shooting.
Yeah.
And the question is, why are you spending time and energy going after this? Well, we'll talk about what evidence there may or may not be, but the question is, why are we going after this when there are some much more likely causes for gun violence, or much more likely things that could be looked into to reduce the risk, such as gun
guns.
Or if we're thinking that this violence, if we, you know, because I think there's an assumption that the violence that happens is linked to mental disorder. I think that is an assumption. But if we do make that assumption, then surely a better conclusion would be to look into what resources are available with regard to mental health.
And that's such a big thing. It's not just like having mental health services, it's having school counselling, and it's having high quality schools, and it's having low stress for students and good social care for students, reducing poverty, all these sort of things where you're not only trying to have the firefighting part of it, where you're putting out the fires, you're trying to stop the fires from developing in the first place, which means protecting people from developing mental health conditions. And, you know, take mental health conditions off the table as well, because I can promise you that not every school shooter has got a mental illness.
They may be angry about how they've been treated and wanting to just simply make a statement of how they feel they've been treated.
Which would be a really bad reaction.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Like, they're not justified.
But it doesn't
mean
that they're
unwell. How we need to sort of respond as a society is to not have this environment where people feel ostracized or marginalized or bullied.
And there is something to be thought about the question of culture, because people have pointed out that there are other countries where, is it the Swiss, where they do have guns and yet they don't have the same level of gun violence. So there's a question of, it's clearly a multifactorial issue. And there is lots of debate over what could be done or what should be done. But I suppose the topical thing of late is one Pennsylvania state politician, Chris Quinn, a Republican, who
has... A Republican, eh?
Well, but to be fair, but I should also mention that I believe that that has been backed by two other Republicans and a Democrat, this proposed bill. And this proposed bill is suggesting a vice tax, a 10% sales tax specifically for violent video games, which would put it in the same sort of category as alcohol,
cigarettes,
as that sort of thing. And he said one factor that may be contributing to the rise in and intensity of school violence is the material kids see and act out in video games. And I think it's a very tricky topic for us to talk about, as we've all obviously got an emotional connection to video games. It's our hobby of choice, and so it is understandable that we're going to have a bias going into this. And I think
not at all. I think I would very happily tell you if a video game caused someone to do a school shooting. It's just a very easy position for me to take that I can't believe that could possibly be the case, that someone could play Call of Duty or GTA and then shoot their school up. I just don't see that logic.
Just to play devil's advocate, I actually agree, and I think the evidence, which we'll talk about in a moment, doesn't support a connection. But just to play devil's advocate for the sake of the argument, we do have this idea that when it comes to suicide, there is an acknowledgement that if you have clear portrayals of suicide as an option, as a thing you can do, whenever that happens, you do see a spike in these things happening. So we do acknowledge that within humanity, that we are influenced by society and by culture.
I want to be clear on the evidence on suicide contagion, because I think that's quite debated. But I accept that certainly some people, you know, who are vulnerable can be at risk from seeing things that might
elicit certain mental
state. Yeah, that might elicit a certain mental state within them. But I think the sort of guidelines we have about suicide, for example, is literally to stop people seeing how it could be done. So don't graphically depict suicide on TV. Otherwise, people will say, oh, that's how to do it. Or don't make it look cool. Don't widely publicize that a cool person has ended their life in a particular way, for example. And because that could end up being the copycat method. But for example, we as clinicians know that asking people about suicide doesn't increase risk of suicide.
Yeah, and the American Psychological Association has acknowledged that while video games may increase aggression levels, there isn't a link between video games and criminal behaviour.
We're talking about, you know, vulnerable, depressed people, or people at risk of suicide. Yeah, you can sort of see how seeing imagery or things that might make your mental state worse might increase risk. Your mental state is influenced both internally and externally. However, that doesn't necessarily have to be analogous to saying, oh, if you see aggressive imagery, that's going to make you aggressive. And also, we just don't have the evidence to back that up, that's what happens.
So I think this is an important thing, is because often emotions get put into play when such issues come out in the general public. And even among doctors and medical professionals, we are as prone as anybody else to make emotional arguments for what we should be looking at the data to see whether it's valid or not. Taking the emotions out of it, the data does not suggest that there's a correlation.
Yeah. There was a very recent study by Andrew Shabelsky and Netta Weinstein, where he and she looked at the extent to which adolescents who spent time playing violent video games exhibited higher levels of aggressive behaviour compared to those who didn't. It was a large number of British adolescents, over 1,000, aged 14 and 15.
So over 1,000 adolescents took part in this study? Okay.
Yeah. And what they want to test, if it is or isn't the case, was that there would be a link between those who've played recent violent gameplay and whether there would be a connection with the assessment by whoever was caring for them of whether they were behaving in an aggressive way. And the results didn't support that. It didn't support a connection between violent gameplay and aggressive behaviour seen by their carer.
I think that's important in a few ways, because typically these studies tend to be self-report studies where the teenager themselves will say, yeah, I play video games, yeah, I'm violent, and it's harder to judge. But getting the family's view,
yeah,
I think that's very important, because from outside yourself, you'll be able to see, like, you know, is someone becoming more violent or not.
And this study makes sense, because if you look at it from a macro point of view, if you look at it broadly over the period of the last several decades and you look at Western society as a whole, we can go from a hobby that did not exist, if you go back a generation or two, to the most popular hobby. You know, there's more money in it than in the likes of films and music and all other forms of entertainment. And yet, you'd think if it was having some really negative effect on people's level of aggression, you'd think that we would have utterly you know, dissolved as a society, and yet looking at crime, there isn't that suggestion.
Violent crime has fallen since the 90s.
Yeah.
And it's at lowest ever.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lord knows, you know, this is something that didn't exist and is now incredibly popular. If you go back a decade, there was a moral panic about e-numbers within foods that children were eating. And, of course, people would say they've eaten, you know, this foodstuff with all these kind of additives and now they're bouncing off the walls. But actually, there's a confirmation bias that parents were expecting that when they eat, you know, all the Skittles, that they're then going to be hyper, when actually it's a bit of confirmation bias and possibly a bit of, if the child's just had lots of sweets, then culturally there's possibly an expectation that you can be a bit more boisterous or you might be in a better mood sort of thing. It doesn't necessarily follow that there are certain E numbers within the substance that was causing it.
It's the autism vaccine thing all over again, isn't it?
Yeah.
No evidence, but confirmation bias.
Because it just happens to time up with other confounding factors. And it's because the age at which that people would typically start to notice autism would happen to coincide after they've had...
I mean, I think the other thing to mention, because you mentioned history, like video games are new, and why isn't this new exposure to this medium driving mass violence?
Whenever there's a new form of technology, there's always a moral panic. There was with the radio, the cinema, sure. TV.
Yeah.
There's a quote
toys. In Victorian era, toys. Yeah.
This might be an apocryphal quote, but I've heard of that it was ascribed to Shigeru Miyamoto saying video games are evil. They said that about rock and roll.
They did say about rock and roll, actually. I mean, whether he said that or not, but they said it about rock and roll.
It's a good quote.
He said about Marilyn Manson, and like, where's the panic of a Marilyn Manson now? He still exists.
I mean, you know, for me, if you've ever kind of chilled with people who are from the goth subculture, you know, they're the most chill bunch you'll ever meet.
So anyway,
same for metalheads.
So anyway, you mentioned history, but I think you also mentioned you should also mention geography, because the UK gets all the same games as does America. I can't name a game that is only in America. That would be significant. That isn't also in the UK. And we don't have gun crime to that degree. We certainly don't have mass shootings to that degree.
Yeah.
We don't have mass shootings every week. Have no school mass shootings.
Because, you know, we have good gun freeze, control.
Wasn't it?
Sorry?
After Dumfries... school shooting, that's why everything was banned.
And similarly in Australia,
after
a gun ban, school shootings.
Yeah, in the UK, if you want to own a shotgun, you need to have a good reason to own one.
So, but that tells us, I would think, and you know, this is not me being scientific, it's just me sort of saying, what do things look like on the face of it, that guns are the issue. Maybe there's of course it's multifactorial, but what's the difference between the UK and America? Mental health provision is also different, obviously,
yeah.
But I feel like guns kill people.
It's the elephant in the room, isn't it? That
no one wants to mention, yeah.
I love that idea, which is...
Well, one half of society wants to mention.
Yeah. But there was an interesting argument. They said they want increased violent games tax by 10% to... reduce violence, isn't it? And we know that increasing the price of something does reduce the rates of its usage. For example, cigarettes, smoking, everything, alcohol. But for some reason, in most societies, there's always a pushback whenever you say that we want to increase something by a small amount just to reduce the rates of people using it. But slightly different in this case because I can't see the association between that and violence within society.
Yeah.
There isn't. Well, like smoking, there is.
And again, I don't think the tax is also isn't just primarily meant to reduce usage of it, because we use it, we don't, I guess.
Yeah.
But what's the money going into? Have you read that?
Oh, yes. So, yeah, that's a good prompt.
So they make money from these games and they're spending all more.
So there were this proposed bill, they're suggesting that the money would go into a digital protection for school safety account, which will be used to improve school safety in Pennsylvania schools.
So this is only one single US state?
Yeah, but...
Why not increase the price of guns? and pump their money back in. Just double the price.
There's actually a routine, a skit. I want to say from Chris Rock. I can't, but I might be misremembering. Yes. Is it him?
Yeah, it is.
Where he suggested that what we should do is increase, as part of a comedy routine, he said we should increase the cost, not of guns, but of bullets. He said that every bullet should cost $1,000. Because then if anyone ever died from being shot, the passerby would look at the person who had died and say, gosh, he must have really done something bad. That guy shot him full of $10,000 worth of bullets.
And there'll be no accidental shootings because it's just too expensive.
Well, you know,
shouldn't laugh at that point, though.
But it is a way
but
of...
But it's a good example of comedy to say the unsayable.
But it is a way of arguing against, for example, assault rifles. Who needs an assault rifle?
Yeah, if you're deer hunting.
But we are becoming an echo chamber of our views are pretty similar.
I don't know, Marcus is a pro gun, I think.
Pro gun.
No.
But the thing is that, of course,
for this
the
argument you're going to be
against gun control is always, first of all, within the Constitution of America. Secondly, they need to have a wild armed militia to go against tyranny in case things happen.
Wow, you're really devils. Because there's no militia that could ever defend themselves.
Yeah, I know. Because that was written at a time where guns were very different, and also where tanks weren't a thing. Or
fighter
stealth jets. Yeah, fighter jets.
But this is the devil's advocate of me pitching it. There is the right for the individual to choose, and it's part of the freedom of what it is about.
Oh, I think there's a lot of arguments that you can make about not criminalizing guns, and one would be that if you did criminalize guns, who's going to suffer most? And it's always going to be the vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, because I do get that argument that it is a real equalizer of it can make, you know, an elderly person equally lethal to a young man.
I meant like who's going to suffer most at the hands of the police, like, you know, who's going to get arrested most for gun possession? Right, the day they outlaw guns and the police go out and catch people who carry guns, who are they going to go after? I'm not going to answer that, but just think for yourself who they're going to go after. Right, so that's what I mean by, like, you know, it's actually a bit of a gray area, really. But the point about putting this money then into school safety is just this again, this sort of wildness of the scenario of, like, to protect our kids we have to make schools more secure. That's the answer. That you have to turn your school into an airport-style situation, a fortress with an armed guard. You know, put guns into schools. That's the sort of solution.
Rather than asking why is it that they have this phenomenon.
It's a really difficult situation actually to start from, because you can't take all the guns out of America. the guns are there. Like, now what? You know, that's a really...
But maybe you should be thinking about the video games aspect of things as opposed to...
So this study by Andrew Shabulski is actually very timely, in that I think it doesn't put the nail in it, but it's a very strong nail. Because the other thing to argue in favour of this study is that it's pre-registered. And that means that they told you what they're looking for before they started looking for it.
So they didn't just throw it away when it didn't confirm their biases.
Not only that, but I mean, you know this whole thing about if you look for 20 things... one of those things is going to hit significance.
Yeah.
Because your P of 0.05 is 1 in 20.
SKCD did a lovely comic on this topic about Smarties
doing
something.
Right, so basically...
And they did it all the colours.
So basically, if your study doesn't tell you what it's looking for to begin with, you're never quite sure if they threw away 19 other things and said, yeah, look, this thing causes violence.
Yeah.
This study told you, look, this is the data we're collecting, this is what our hypothesis is, this is what we're looking for. And they came up short. They didn't find a connection between people playing video games and causing aggression. The other thing is what they measured, which was friend, family, whatever, saying, is this person violent? The word violent is important, because what aggression is a very sort of broad concept. And I think sometimes when studies find that video games are related to aggression, it's related to a very...
teenage behavior. you know, there's a lot of aggression can be used to how they express, measure, communicate a lot of things.
But also how they measure aggression. Disagree
with their parents.
Yeah.
Obviously they're really aggressive.
But also how they measure aggression. Some experiments is simply like, am I willing to do this to someone? Am I willing to flick someone? That's aggression. And like, after
you have to say what you were doing there,
yeah,
Sachin.
Well, I flicked
don't flick me.
I flicked Marcus. The thing is like, yeah, after playing a video game, maybe you're more likely to blow a buzzer in someone's ear. And that's aggression, apparently. It is.
But no one
but
got hurt.
But it's not what we're worried about. Yeah. We're worried about school shooters and, like, are people who play video games more likely to school shoot? The real difficulty is you can't, like, look at all the school shooters and say, did they play video games? Everyone plays video games.
Everyone plays computer games.
You can't do it. You can't do it backwards. What you can do is say, look, the whole country plays video games and not... You know, there's very few school shootings.
I remember one school shooting where they went into the house of the shooters and they found that they had been playing computer games, and they mentioned, I think they'd been playing, amongst other things, Final Fantasy VII. And I'm just trying to imagine how on earth you could imagine that would make you a violent person, because it's very abstract, sort of.
Well, we have to look at it evidence-based, and maybe Final Fantasy VII is the cause.
This is the thing, there's evidence and there's also just like what seems logical on the face of it. And I get it, we can't always rely on that, but some things are just implausible, you know, from the get-go. The other thing to mention is just like, I do believe that people play video games and get amped.
Oh yes.
But I believe that people go to football matches and get amped.
And don't kill people afterwards.
But, well, because you see football matches where afterwards there is riots, hooliganism, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I believe that people get amped, but...
But nobody's banning football matches. We acknowledge that people do get amped, but they're allowed to.
Exactly. So, I'm not advocating for banning anything. I'm just saying that, you know, part of the human experience of getting excited playing a video game might mean, you know, listen... you might screw up so bad at a video game multiple times that you throw a controller against the wall and break it.
I might end up talking to the screen.
You might, yeah, exactly. You might shout, you might get angry, you might have a heated gamer moment.
This pulls back to the idea that the people who commit aggression probably aren't. The aggression itself needs to come from somewhere. Probably maybe the amping up is a catalyst for some... You can't amp up someone who's not an aggressive person by nature.
Yeah. And this is the thing, like... when a certain YouTube streamer had his epic gamer... heated gamer moment, uh-huh. Where he got angry and said a very bad word. A lot of people said, I get really angry at games, but that word is 100% not in my vocabulary.
Yeah.
So there has to be something innate in you.
It's possibly a combination of things that have to all line up. And possibly one of those things that needs to line up near the start, one of the predisposing things, would be looking at their pro-social attitudes versus antisocial attitudes and their attitudes towards violence, or if it's, you know, or towards whatever it is, the thing that you don't want to happen.
Yeah.
So I think that the underlying attitudes of the person is clearly... clearly important.
Yeah. I've not ruled out that games, you know, make people amped, like a lot of things do. But when it comes down to then...
Actually doing something criminal, you know, because I get grumpy if I'm doing very badly, but I would never, you know, never lead to violence to another person.
Right. And then when it comes down to what we do about it, I mean, what do you feel? Is a syntax applicable to video games?
I wouldn't put it in the same category as alcohol or cigarettes, no.
Definitely. It's not about aggression, but Simon Wesley said when the chief medical officer released her report that the current evidence about screen time is that it's not related to depression or bad health outcomes. Simon Wesley said, look, I think right now there's no evidence for it. I think probably there is some sort of link, but we know 10 different things which are way worse, which we need to concentrate on.
Mm.
So this puts it to bed. Like, you know, maybe there's a 0.4 shift in people's depression. 0.4% shift in people's depression. Are you going to concentrate on that? Or are you going to concentrate on poverty and mental health?
It might be a bit of a confounding factor. And I think, yeah, there certainly is an idea that if you want good mental health, being absolutely stationary and not moving from one spot is probably not good for that. I think we would agree on that front. Well, and it may be that a long amount of screen time is a surrogate for being very stationary.
Well, to be fair, I mean, right. I can read a book and sit there for hours and no one will say a single word to me.
No, so there is a cultural thing as well, what we judge to be good and what we judge to be bad. I think, I'm sure we all remember as a kid being told that you're going to get square eyes.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing as well, like, maybe, like put evidence out the window, like, are we morally going to say that people can't do things that might potentially, you know, potentially
have some sort of negative
outcome? Some negative, like, you know, I think that it really just comes down to, if you want your kids not to play GTA, make that a moral decision. Like, I don't want my kids to play a game where people gun people down and not think about, like, oh, what's the percentage risk that they could become violent from this? It's like, maybe morally you don't want your kids to play that. And I think that's a far more honest...
It's a more valid argument.
I think it's a more honest argument as well. Mm. It's just like, that's what I believe. I believe that my kids shouldn't be watching 18-rated movies.
Mm.
And then some parents may think that the kids are ready for it when they're 15. Like, you know, I think that's far more honest.
Yeah, that basically leaves it up into the hands of the... I was about to say consumer, but that's not the right term. Well, the person, isn't the person making the decisions, as opposed to the government trying to control everyone by a nanny state, which is not always the right thing, A, because kind of it takes away freedom of speech, and B, also I think it assumes there's a one-size-fits-all to everyone else.
So I think...
And that's an argument, by the way, against this video game syntax, is, especially in America, that it violates freedom of speech.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
So I think we've covered quite a lot. Any final thoughts before we call it a day?
Don't be ashamed to play violent games.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I think everything in moderation.
Are you ashamed to play Apex Legends?
It's not a violent game.
Okay, what do we mean by violent games then? What do we mean by violent games?
Hang on.
Another can of
worms. Okay. Okay, let me tell you what you should be ashamed about, right?
This is gonna be an outtakes.
No, okay.
It's Sachin, so it's up to him.
let me tell you what you should be ashamed about. This story came out in The Guardian, I believe, and on YouTube, obviously, about someone in Red Dead Redemption 2 who assaulted a suffragette in the game.
Oh, yeah. Were they focusing on suffragettes?
Yeah, focusing on suffragettes.
And that's the worry, because I think you know, it's a game where where there's a lot of violence, a lot of people get shot. But for someone who would focus on women, and focus on women who are advocating for women's rights, that's concerning, isn't it? That you would get pleasure from focusing on that particular subgroup.
That's misogyny being presented in the virtual form.
And that you would then upload it to say...
And that's the content of it. And someone would argue, well, you can kill anyone in the game, right? I think there is a difference between cartoon violence and graphical depiction of abuse. And I think this is now getting into sort of like, you know, very realistic territory in some games, where if you hit someone and they cower and they look in pain and things like that, what that means. And if you keep doing that, if you keep beating up someone in a sort of abuse sort of situation, which is not the same as when I used to play GTA 3 and you like blow up 10 cars.
Red Dead Redemption 2 is slightly stylized.
You don't see the suffering, really.
So
is it only because it's suffering?
Yeah.
But there's a counter-argument of why people play, what do you call it, you know, the Call of Duty, and they are basically nuking parts of the map and killing lots of people, but they don't feel anything because they don't actually see the ramifications.
Oh, the part in Call of Duty where you do drone strikes.
Yeah.
We should mention that Red Dead Redemption 2, which is what the point was as we were talking about, is a game where the art style is slightly stylized, but essentially it is going for a relatively high level of realism in how things are portrayed.
Yeah. And I think people, there are lines to be drawn here. Would you, not you, I'm not going to ask you the answer to this question, but would someone do the same thing that they do in video games to children? Would they feel that same gut reaction or feel an aversion to shooting a child in a video game?
If I saw someone who was focusing on that and uploading it to YouTube, I would be it would make me raise an eyebrow at the person who's choosing to do that.
So I don't think it's completely... I don't think it's completely...
We've talked about this
devoid of moral.
I'm sure we have in one of the previous podcasts, but it's the question of fantasy, the question of, like, if you're doing this, to what extent you're doing this. And I think there's also the aspect of identity. Like, for example, the suffragettes, if someone killed a person, oh, it's just a woman. But no, why do you say specifically this person of a suffragette that they
So
killed?
I think what you're saying is that it's not actually about the act, it's about the motivation behind the act. As obviously no one is being hurt here, but the question is more, what was the motivation?
Oh, I mean, what is the message that
what
it
is
says?
The message?
To some degree, yeah, that's hate propaganda, it's hate crime.
Look, but the thing is that I think part of what Marcus says is true as well. It's for the... It's a manifestation of somebody's inner health beliefs, isn't it?
Yeah.
How we, but, you know, we, but the thing is also the ability to differentiate between, is this a manifestation of a fantasy or manifestation of how you feel inside, or what is it that is a manifestation of? For example, there are people who would do things within video game just because they can.
Mm-hmm.
And they're never going to do it in real life because they know that societal constraints are such that they won't and they can't. And we do it all the time. You play any sort of...
If you play the original GTA, they would have bits where there was a cult that would run along the pavement in a line.
Yeah, and then people...
I get that, but like the original GTA, the people were like 10 pixels
little
big.
Ants.
But
yeah.
you could counter the argument by saying, okay, oh, no, GTA looks so realistic to me right now. Oh, not GTA. Remember when GTA 3 first came out and I was going, wow, this looks so real. And then now you're seeing Red Dead Redemption and going, oh, wow, this looks so real. But actually, it's real for right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe in about 10 years time, 15 years time, everybody's using VR and you're going, Jesus, that was really crude. But so I think on one hand, of course, I'm not comfortable with the idea of what's happened. I saw the video as well. It was not a pleasant one. It was not a nice one. I think the message is more important. Why this person uploaded it? Why this person? What was the message the person was saying? That's different. Then if somebody acts like this, although again doesn't sit comfortably with me within the game, without spreading that message out, will it be different? Would you then go, oh, anybody who does this within the game should be reported up to the police as a, or should be red flagged as a risk? Women straight away.
No. And there's such a balance between privacy and freedom of thought and I agree with that.
So are we only just saying this because we're going, well, this part of abhorrent behaviour we disagree with, but actually the part of the abhorrent behaviour, which is you shooting the whole town up, we are pretty okay with that. You know, we're fine with that as a behaviour.
I think you can stretch the argument of you can do whatever you want within a virtual setting or within a fake setting to argue for things that are actually currently illegal to do virtually. And I wonder if you did stretch it forward 15 years where we get very realistic VR and you do allow people to... This is like a Westworld sort of situation where you can go to a Westworld and you can kill an android. How comfortably do we sit with that kind of world?
There's a thing like in Skyrim. You know, there's this always classical thing where somebody will quick save just before they decide to try to destroy the entire town. To be honest, I never did because I don't like losing. But it's not an uncommon sort of phenomenon. But if you said that to anybody that, oh, would you just destroy an entire city just because you can? It would be abhorrent.
I think that's
horrible.
I think destroying a city is so much more cartoonish and abstract than abusing someone.
It's like with Kill Bill where the violence is so incredibly over.
It's cartoon.
That it actually has less impact.
But it's happened before. There's the idea of somebody who has been destroying entire communities happened before. It's not an unheard of
behavior.
It's genocide. Exactly. It's unheard of behavior. It has happened before.
But it depends how it's depicted. I mean, I don't know how much suffering you can see in Skyrim when you're...
Oh, yeah, they're all cowering as you burn them to death. It's just what it is.
Yeah. Well, anyway, but I separate that from the conversation we're having about games causing aggression and violence, in that this is more of like a moral sort of...
Yeah.
A moral argument. Because, I don't see any evidence that...
No, there's no evidence.
I don't see any evidence that engaging in violence would increase the risk of... That said,
criminal
behaviour. That said, who knows? We don't really get to study people who admit to... Well...
Actually, that I think we probably need to wind down soonish, but that is a very key point, is that what we're measuring here is a super rare event. So trying to kind of get studies to find out if something is going to increase the risk of something, which is a very rare thing to occur, is very difficult to do.
Yeah.
Although that does make the bigger argument of why is this such a big news story when the number of people dying to school shootings compared to the number of people dying of diabetes complications, asthma complications, swimming pools, is more significant, but doesn't get the airtime.
It's because it shouldn't happen. That's the thing. It is a perception that this should not
happen. It's about the perception of control, and people are more frightened of things which they do not have control over, that they do not have. It's like why people are more frightened of planes, of dying in a plane crash, versus dying on the motorway in their own car, even though they may be a much worse driver than a pilot.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. School shootings are an absolute tragedy and abhorrent and should never happen, and I'm not surprised they're in the news. And that's absolutely makes sense to me. If the news reported on the biggest killer, then you'd never see Alzheimer's outside of the news. You'd never see malaria off the news either. You know, if we actually reported every day that hundreds of people, thousands of people are dying to this.
Yeah, people drown in swimming pools in people's backyards.
It's the humanistic element of it, though. People cannot get their heads around the fact that there is someone of their own race and creed who took up a gun and killed loads of people in cold blood.
Yeah.
That is shocking.
No, it's absolutely shocking, and I'm not surprised it's in the news, and I would never sort of diminish the importance of it.
Whereas things like malaria, diabetes, well, it's biological.
But it's also like how comfortable we've become with malaria and diabetes. We're not.
I don't think people are comfortable with
it's
it.
Not
like, there's
surprising
advertisements saying things like cancer kills, help us beat cancer, and things like that.
I think if there was anywhere near as much outrage, let's take biological illness out of it. Poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If anyone was nearly as outraged about poverty, then you'd think something would be done by it. You would never see poverty outside of the news. But it's something
could,
that we
could cause a lot more. From a utilitarian point of view, you could do a lot more good.
Like austerity, I suppose.
Not enough. Not enough at all. Not proportionately to how many people it kills and how many lives it ruins. But anyway, sorry to depress you.
Yeah, we should probably, I think we've blethered on long enough. So shall we all say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Bye from Phi, Marcus.
Thanks for having us. It's been a most informative discussion.
And Sachin?
As long as it's virtual, you do you. Bye.
Thank you very much. Have a good day, everyone.
Bye-bye.